So, Ariel, what did people tell you about the way that all this could affect the way that a family responds if they identify that perhaps a child or one of their children is engaging with this kind of material online?
Yeah, it's so difficult, isn't it? One thing that was raised with me that there could be an unintended consequence of this kind of legislation, that it could undermine counterterrorism as a whole, I was told, if parents were less willing to reach out to authorities for help, if they thought it could put into gear this fear that their child could be imprisoned for this offence, which is possible, I suppose. There does need to be a framework around parents if they have these kinds of concerns. We do need to know if children are engaging with this material and perhaps, you know, being radicalised. It is a risk. But at the same time, there are these open questions about whether this is the most appropriate sort of avenue to deal with it for really young people, and especially young people with certain vulnerabilities. And I should say too, we are in this place where children as young as 10 can be charged with this federal offence, but the Attorney General must also consent to their prosecution of anyone under 18. There's also this principle in law in Australia that for those under 14, the state must overcome the this presumption that someone younger than 14 may not have knowledge to form criminal intent. But this is still a 14, 15-year-old.
We know that being in the criminal justice system, having charges, can have lifelong consequences for young people. What kinds of sentences have some of these people faced?
Unfortunately, it's difficult to be entirely definitive about like the trends in sentencing. I did see a lot of cases where people were diverted into counselling, into family conference. So a lot of young people were not getting custodial sentences necessarily off the back of these charges. But I think we shouldn't underestimate how intense it is to be before the court. You know, some of the kids had been taken into custody. You know, in some cases, this was not their only offence that they had been charged with. So there were quite serious matters on the table. But it was a range there, and I think we should be thinking about whether the court system is the best way to intervene when a young person is engaging with this type of material. Is this the most effective kind of holistic mental health informed way of approaching this problem? Because, you know, reading through some of these cases, I still think about one matter relating to a 15-year-old in South Australia. You know, reading through the sentencing remarks, you get the story of somebody's life. Often it can be just so tragic to read about. And in this case, the magistrate acknowledged this 15-year-old's severe language disorder, social issues and disrupted childhood, and gave this quote, "You were given access to the internet unrestricted at about the age of 5, and it would appear that the internet has largely raised you." You know, that's kind of stuck with me. For some of these young people, this is the kind of lives that they're living.
So what would be then the appropriate response or solution? Do people want the legislation changed or amended, or is it the case that education is needed?
Education was certainly a theme that I got from a lot of different experts on in this story. My colleague who I wrote this story with, Nino Bucci, our law and justice reporter, he spoke with Dr. Vicky Gibbs, who's a clinical psychologist and the head of research at ASPECT, which is the Autism Spectrum Australia. And, you know, she talked about making sure that there were a range of options available for parents who are concerned about a young person's online behaviour. In some cases, counter-terror police have referred some children on for individual kind of needs-based assessments. Other clinical psychologists also reinforce this education point. Are children being taught in schools about the kind of material that it is illegal to intentionally possess? These are, I think, questions that adults would struggle with. I'm not quite sure how an education program for young people would necessarily work, but there was a lot of concern. And Dr. Andrew Zammit, who I mentioned before, terrorism and security researcher at Victoria University, in his view, he told me on balance that this was a bad law that raised more practical and moral problems than it solved, especially because it was hard to judge whether this kind of law would actually help prevent terrorist attacks, because there was no need to prove this nexus between possessing the material and any sort of terrorist attempt. So these are the sort of sticky questions this law continues to raise for a lot of people.
Ariel, as always, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
That was Investigations reporter Ariel Bogle. You can find more of her work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to her latest piece on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria and Miles Herbert. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget you can subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please leave us a review. I'm Noor Haider. Thanks for listening.